No. First choice for low heart rate is nothing. It's only if it's symptomatic that you would give it.
Well, so assuming that they're symptomatic, there you go.
Yes. And then that's usually temporary until the patient gets pacemaker. Alright, so, that's what you need to know in general is the side effects of these drugs. Because they all have the same side effects, just in varying degrees. What you need to know about each one is what it's used for. So, what's atropine used for primarily?
Heart.
What is ibuprofen used for? Lungs, asthma, COPD. Oxybutynin. Okay, same thing for flunitrazine, which is spelled wrong. That A should be a dicyclamine. GI. Irritable bowel. Polyamine, motion sickness, the main thing it's used for nowadays.
You also had child's rest?
It used to be used, yeah.
So, but that wouldn't be the first?
Yeah, no. And what they would do is they would give so much the patients that have the side effect of dementia. They would be just loony to us. They don't use anything to make it crazy anymore. Okay, cholinesterase inhibitors. Cholinesterase inhibitors increase the cholinergic system, and they do it everywhere there's acetylcholine. The way they work is by decreasing the destruction of the acetylcholine, and therefore there's more of it. So, the two drugs, neostigmine and physostigmine. Neostigmine is used for myasthenia gravis. Physostigmine is used for antidote to atropine. And if you overdose on one of these, what's the antidote?
Atropine.
So they're counter antidotes to each other. Alright, sympathetic drugs. Catecholamines look and act like epinephrine and norepinephrine. In fact, the first two are epinephrine and norepinephrine. Dopamine and butamine have more narrow action than epinephrine and norepinephrine. Butamine is primarily used for stress echoes. When there's a stress test where a patient can't walk on the treadmill, they're going to use butamine to stress the heart instead. It can also be used for shock and heart failure, but less common. Dopamine and levofed, or norepinephrine, are most commonly used for shock and heart failure. And then epinephrine is used for a lot of different stuff. One of them is when your patient is dead. One of them is when your patient has status asthmaticus, which is defined as asthma does not respond to treatment for more than 30 minutes. And then we also use it in small amounts when added to lidocaine to increase the efficacy of the lidocaine. It will make it last longer and decrease the bleeding and reduce the amount of lidocaine that's needed. Then we have some pathomimetics, phenylephrine and pseudoephedrine, and those work by just stimulating the sympathetic system in general. They're primarily used as what kind of drugs?
Decongestants.
By the way, there is a woman who is going to jail for 6 or 8 years, I can't remember which, because she lived in Alabama, across the state line of Louisiana to buy Sudafed. It's illegal to do that, by the way.
Wait. Why'd she do that?
Because she's going to go on a diving trip, and she needed Sudafed so that she could clear her ears. And she had already bought Sudafed in Alabama and couldn't buy any more for the month or whatever. So she decided she'd go to Louisiana and do it. And so the pharmacy called the cops on her, and they picked her up right afterwards. Yep. Yeah. And she didn't know better. You're not supposed to talk to cops. You never told you that. Everything she said was used against her at court of law.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, you can go to court.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you plead no low contender. No contest. I'm guilty, but I can't prove it. Or I'm not guilty, but I can't prove it. And then the ticket itself goes away, so there's no points.
There's no credit.
For dopamine and norepinephrine.
What intersection was that?
Congress, Livermore.
Livermore? Oh, that's
dopamine and norepinephrine are shocking.
Shock and heart. Oh, by the way, what is the big risk with all of these things? Say it. They can cause heart problems, tachycardia, high blood pressure. But there's two major problems with using these drugs. If you have a patient who has shock or heart failure, you're giving these to these patients, chances are they end up with two major complications. One is kidney failure, and the other is tissue necrosis in the fingers and toes. And both are being caused by vasoconstriction. So basically, you have so little circulation in your fingers and toes, they just kind of fall off. They turn black and die. You pop them off just like with crossbite.
Yes,
because of vasoconstriction. And then, the kidney failure is also because of vasoconstriction. And then one other problem is ischemic ulcers, where your stomach gets ulcers because of the ischemic attack associated with the alpha-1 stimulation. Alright. Next, we have alpha blockers. Tracycin and betalanine. The way they work is by blocking alpha-1. Yeah. So they're going to cause vasodilation. And they're also going to cause relaxation of the urethra. So, tracycin can be used for both high blood pressure and for BPH, but it's more commonly used for BPH. The phenytoin is primarily used for the vasodilation, but not for high blood pressure, but for overdose of epinephrine. And then you can also use alpha blockers to treat pheochromocytoma, which is cancer of the adrenal gland.
Which one?
It can be either one, but
same.
I don't know. I've never treated a patient with pheochromocytoma, so I only have a book to go on with here, so I don't know. Could be either one though on the test. Then we have beta blockers, which work by blocking beta. We need to know which ones are selective and which ones are non-selective, because there's two types of beta. So which ones are non-selective?
Propanolol
and carbetolol. Propanolol is spelled wrong, by the way. There's an extra R in there. It's supposed to be. It should be like this. So propanolol. So because they're not selective, they're going to affect beta 1 and beta 2. And the two things you have to worry about with that are diabetes and asthma. Which one is more concerning for us? Asthma. And then the cardioselective ones, do they also affect diabetes? Yes. How? They mask the symptoms. So, all four of them will mask the symptoms of hypoglycemia, but the non-selective ones will also inhibit the release of sugar from the liver. So they have a little extra that you have to worry about. In the old days, hang on a second. In the old days, the concern over the diabetes was so big that you would not give a beta blocker to a patient with diabetes. Now it's like, oh.
So, some are selective for heart failure.
Right.
So, if you ask the question, you would say the
patient has heart failure. Yeah. Right. And then you need to know which of those four are used for heart failure. Then we have indirect synthetic antagonists, which is
question. So, Mr. Wall, if that doesn't treat asthma, that's a side effect?
No. It's just that it doesn't affect asthma. Because it doesn't affect beta 2.
Okay.
The cardioselective ones don't affect beta 2, so therefore they don't hurt patients with asthma. Whereas propranolol and carbidolol, because they affect beta 2, they block beta 2, they're going to inhibit the effectiveness of asthma treatments. And COPD treatment for that matter. Yes. All right. The indirect synthetic antagonist, clonidine works by inhibiting production of norepinephrine in the central nervous system. And it can be used for what, two things?
Hypertension
and cancer pain. But the cancer pain is only when you inject it into the spinal cord. So which one is more common?
Hypertension.
That's the most
often
one.
Yeah.
What?
We just go to the most
common.
That's the one that's used often in hospitals.
Emergency. Oh, yeah. Patient comes in with like blood pressure 180. Here, acetonide. Brings it right down. Okay, go see your doctor on Monday. It's no longer an emergency. Mm-hmm. All right. Do I need to talk anything about these?
All of them?
Okay. So, penicillin G and BK are the same thing except the way they're given. Penicillin G is injection only. Penicillin B or BK is PO only. The B should be taken on an empty stomach. There's three types of penicillin G, which last longer or shorter depending on which one it is. And you don't really need to know all the detail about that. But just know that G is injection only, and it can be either IM or IV. Methicillin is no longer on the market, but the reason we put that one on there is because of MRSA. It's also narrow spectrum, but it's resistant to penicillin X. So you can use it, and drugs like it, for Staph aureus, because 90% of Staph aureus has or produces beta-lactamase. Yes, penicillin can be used for strep. Oh, that's still strep. Streptococcus pyogenes.
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah, too much to list. Then we have a broader spectrum one, so by adding an amino to it, we're going to increase the range of drugs that, or range of bacteria that can be treated, and that's amoxicillin and ampicillin. Amoxicillin is more common outpatient, and ampicillin is probably more common inpatient. Then we have the extended spectrum, which is primarily extended to what thing? Pseudomonas. Then, we can give amoxicillin and hypericillin bodyguards. And they become zosyn and augmentin. Which one becomes zosyn? Hypericillin. Which one becomes augmentin? Amoxicillin.
For ear
infection,
you can use
amoxicillin, usually for an ear
infection, but then augmentin looks better. It can be.
So what do you get augmentin and amoxicillin?
I might. Okay, so if we did, would the augmentin instead of amoxicillin?
It would depend on the question.
Well, because I feel like the amoxicillin is a lot of calories.
The key thing is, if they're both on there, is does this patient need to have a does the drug need to have a protection of the clopidogrel?
When would it?
When there's a possibility that the bacteria you're getting could be producing beta-lactamase.
You don't tell
that? Well, you should probably know. But anyway, don't worry too much about it. You guys come up with way crazier questions than I would ever.
No.
If I made a test entirely of questions that you guys had, everyone would. Alright, so cephalus ones, first generation spasolin, second generation ceftriaxone, third ceftriaxone, and fourth cefepime. Those are representative only. They're like 24 different cep drugs. So you need to know the generalities of, as you move from first to fourth, you have more gram negative, you have less gram positive, you have more blood-brain barrier penetration, and more resistance to penicillinase or beta-lactamase. Now, there is one exception. Cefepime also has very good gram-positive, even though it's more down to the third generation. I'm not going to touch on that. Yes. In the hospital, first and second generation are generally only used for prophylaxis, so preventing an infection, typically before or after surgery. If you work on a surgical floor, you will see a ton of spasolin. Only they'll call it ANSIP. Ceftriaxone, its major claim to fame is that you can give it IM, one injection, and that's the treatment for an entire course of antibiotics. Say it. I think except for three. And then ceftriaxone hurts like heck when you give it that way. Ceftriaxone is also one of the drugs of choice for treating pneumonia, but when treating pneumonia, it's typically going to be given IV instead of IM. Then we have carbapenem. Carbapenems are one of the broadest spectrum, and imipenem is one of them. Monobactams are the opposite. It is the most narrow, and is also extremely resistant to beta-lactamase. Yes, ma'am.
I saw somewhere, we don't use
cefepime,
or do we
ever? It's very rarely used, because we're saving it for later.
Okay.
Have you ever seen Beetlejuice? Say that later. All right. Terrifying. All right. Then vancomycin, used for MRSA. Can also be used for C. diff. When you use for C. diff, how is it typically given?
Yeah.
And that's the only time. Why?
Because
it can't get absorbed through the GI tract. One of the major adverse effects of vancomycin.
Okay,
ototoxicity.
Nephrotoxicity.
And one more. Thrombophlebitis. So how do we prevent the thrombophlebitis?
Give it slowly.
Okay, we're going to dilute it some more, and we're going to give it more slowly. So I'm going to tell you right now, most antibiotics that you give IV, you're going to put them in 50 milliliters, and you're going to give them over half an hour. Vanco, you put it in 100 milliliters, so twice as much dilution, and you can give it over a whole hour, so you can give it over twice the period. Right. Now, usually when you give an IV drug, to do a peak level is going to be 30 minutes after it finishes going in. But because it takes a whole hour to do vanco, a peak for vanco is going to be immediately after giving.
So 60 minutes, right? And
yeah.
Trough is right before.
Right, and trough is right before you get it.
Right.
Yeah. Take a plan, and go do on your test. See, you learned something for coming here. Tetracyclines, short-acting and long-acting, and there's mid-acting that you guys don't need to know. The tetracycline, used for a lot of different stuff. Major adverse effects, photosensitivity. Use it in kids, can also inhibit the growth of their teeth, and can also cause yellowing of the teeth. Doxycycline, used for, everything. Including prevention of malaria. Some of you, if you have gone on mission trips, may actually take doxycycline. Then we have macrolides, erythromycin, azithromycin, and the one that you know there is chlorithromycin. All three have gram-positive and gram-negative activity. We use for things like upper respiratory infections, ear infections, and they are drugs of choice for patients who are allergic to the cell.
Nothing for community-acquired pneumonia.
You can use, yeah, you can use them for community-acquired pneumonia. And they all have, say it?
Chlamydia?
Yes. The possibility.
Clap.
Yes. You need to correct the clap for a podcast. I said, no idea. What? I don't know if this is about you. Chlamydia, that's just a pretty name. And then, where is it? And major adverse effects for those drugs is GI. In specific, diarrhea and cramping. Erythromycin can also be used off-label for slow bowel speed up. No, not this test. I don't think. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, if it gets diarrhea.
All right, clindamycin, we already talked about what you need to know about that, so I think we can skip it. Broad spectrum, but gram-positive only. Major risk factor for C. diff. And was often used for patients who have allergy to COVID. All right. Linezolid or Zybox can be used for MRSA. It can be given PO or IV. The PO version has phenylalanine in it, so patients with PKU should not take it. No matter how you take it, IV or PO, it has MAO inhibition as a side effect. So patients who are on it should not be taking. They should avoid foods with tyramine, and they should also not be taking what kind of drugs?
MAO.
They should not be taking sympathomimetics. So no drug that can stimulate the sympathetic nervous system. Or Pinacol. Can cause aplastic anemia. May be fatal, so don't use it unless absolutely necessary. And it's very broad spectrum, is used for mixed infections.
I have a question.
Possibly. Yes. 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 She said, if someone has MRSA, which one are you going to give? And I said, yes. Because that's not my job. That's the doctor's job. In fact, it's not even the doctor's job. It's the infectious disease specialist's job. Yes. You just need to know that it can be used. All right, lifivactrin is a topical antibiotic that can be used for MRSA. It is most often used in bird patients who are allergic to sulfa drugs. Then we have aminoglycosides, which are used for gram-negative aerobic bacteria only, primarily used for GI and lung infections, although neomycin is often used for skin infections as well, and the eye. Used for the eye. If you have conjunctivitis, one of the drugs you can use is neomycin combined with some other substance. They have to be given IV if they're being used systemically. There's also an inhaled version of tobramycin, which is used primarily for cystic fibrosis patients. Major adverse effect is nephrotoxicity and ototoxicity. When it comes to ototoxicity, what are the two things you want to watch for?
Tinnitus.
No, I mean in the patient. What kind of symptoms?
Tinnitus and headaches.
Okay, tinnitus and headaches. So, how do you prevent the ototoxicity?
Give one
One larger dose instead of several smaller doses. And how do you prevent the nephrotoxicity? Limit the cumulative dose, so once they've gotten a certain amount of it in a certain amount of time, you cut them off, no more. And in the IV tubing, it's incompatible with what drugs?
Penicillin.
Penicillin. Alright, and now we are where you were asking about, Carly. Sulfamethoxazole, when you mix it with trimethoprim, becomes septrum, also known as Bactrim. And is abbreviated TOPSNC. And it's the drug of choice for uncomplicated urinary tract infections. Speaking of urinary tract infections, what would make it uncomplicated? No catheter, no surgery, and no immunosuppression. If the patient has any of those things, it would be considered complicated. What do you want to do then? You gotta do culture.
That's my
first thought. Right now, I haven't seen one of these kinds since I was in like elementary school. So why is it elementary school? Surprised it's not healthy. Okay. Princess who? Generic princess? This isn't Belle.
Who is it?
It doesn't
look like
that. Yeah. I know
that it's
from that
person.
Well,
you really
want that. Anyway,
moving along. Silver sulfamethoxazole, also known as sulfadine, is primarily a topical antibiotic that's used for burn patients. And it's not the sulfadiazine that does the work, it's the silver ions. Silver acts as an antimicrobial.
Can we give it to them if they're...
Right. Use it to prevent infections. Once the infection has occurred, then you got to use something that helps. Fluoroquinolones, very broad spectrum antibiotics that actually inhibit the DNA replication of bacteria, and used for all kinds of different stuff. Ciprofloxacin and levofloxacin are two main ones. Cipro, there's a lot of resistance to it, so it's not used for pneumonia anymore because it's just too resistant, it's just too much resistance to it. But Levaquin is still used, you know, one of the drugs of choice for pneumonia. They can both be used for urinary tract infections in patients who have allergies to septra. Then the last one on our other is flagyl. And that one is used for anaerobic bacteria. And three major things that you should probably know about are bacterial vaginosis, which is similar to a yeast infection, but it's an overgrowth of bacteria. Rosacea. And I just drew a blank on the other one.
C.
diff. Yes, how could I? There you go. We are so close to being on the
same
level.
So you want to ask us,
antifungals. Amphotericin B is only used for systemic. It's not used for superficial, which means like skin, mouth, and vagina. Clotrimazole and fluconazole are used for superficial. Fluconazole is used systemically, and the major claim to fame is that for vaginal yeast infections, it is a one-dose cure most of the time. And it's a drug of choice for thrush. Within a year, it takes 7 days for thrush. Lamisil and nystatin, just some other ones. Lamisil is available over the counter. Its major claim to fame is it's one of the most effective ones for nail fungus. But you have to take it for 3 months because that's how long it takes to grow out a toenail. Nystatin is available as a powder and is also available as a mouthwash for patients who are immunosuppressed your risk for thrush. We have antivirals. Acyclovir, valacyclovir are used for herpes. What is the relationship between the two drugs?
One's a prodrug.
Valacyclovir is a prodrug. Why would we give a prodrug instead of the active drug? Because it's better absorbed PO. You can actually get IV levels in the body by giving it them. Same relationship between ganciclovir and valganciclovir, but what's it used for? On Friday, the juniors had like this little shindig, and they had helium balloons.
Yeah, they had it on Facebook.
Oh, it's on Facebook? They don't even have the decency to tag me in it? I'm friends with some of them.
So
I don't even get to hear my own video.
On my watch.
Anyway, hepatitis, vaccines. We have them for hepatitis A and B, but not for C. And then if you're on B and retroviral. Major thing about these, use them for hepatitis C, is the combination is devastating to the psyche. So the patients need a psyche valve before they do it. And what are you screening for? Depression and support. Social support. Then we have influenza, the vaccine. Not very effective, but, you know, whatever. Need to know about the vaccine. We already had a question on the first test. It might be one of the final, I don't know. And then the amantadine and neuraminidase inhibitors. Amantadine is used primarily for influenza A. And neuraminidase inhibitors for influenza B. And I guess there's also Tamiflu, which is for influenza A. But doesn't really work very well. Alright, respiratory drugs. Albuterol, short acting, used as a rescue inhaler. Used every 4 to 6 hours, usually 2 puffs. How long should you wait between puffs?
1 minute.
At least 1 minute. Give a chance to work, so the second dose would be more effective. All inhaled drugs need to not stop breathing in when the little stops and keep the inhalation going. The more you use albuterol, the less well it works. If you use it too often, it can result in sudden death because it just stops working enough. So what kind of drug can kind of reset that and make it work better again?
Steroids.
Long-acting beta agonists is salmeterol and formoterol. They are to be used whether the patient feels like they need it or not, and the patient should never, ever use it as a rescue inhaler. So with salmeterol, it's not available by itself as an inhaler, and for formoterol, it's a dry powder inhaler, so hopefully patients shouldn't get confused with their rescue inhaler. Ipratropium is used as an inhaler and also as a nebulizer. It's primarily used for COPD, but it can be used for asthma as well. It is a drug of choice, first-line drug of choice for COPD.
Atrovent,
yes. Atrovent is also available as a nasal spray for patients who have large amounts of mucus with allergies. So if you're like, you know, runny nose all day long,
is that what
allergic rhinitis is? No. Yes. Can be used for that as well. Methylxanthine, the major one, well, there's two, theophylline and aminophylline. And they are, they're very similar to caffeine, and they cause stimulation of the sympathetic nervous system, which can result in bronchodilation. Shunting can also cause high heart rate and tachycardia and dysrhythmia. Yay! So we don't use them very often. They're considered third line. What does that mean?
Last.
Not like a last resort, like you're going to die, but you use them after other drugs haven't been enough. And then we have the anti-inflammatories, inhaled steroid, fluticasone. What are the major adverse effects of inhaled steroids over regular steroids? thrush, and hoarseness. Although we prefer the cool word is phonia. How do you prevent those? So have a patient rinse their mouth after they use the drug.
Would they rinse
that? No, just water. And then respiratory drugs, Calumet and Advair, just a mixture of other stuff. All right, platelets. Gosh, we just did these. Did I really need to go over those? Okay. Electrolytes. Do I need to do these? Anemia drugs. Yes, ma'am.
All right. On the respiratory test, there was a question of which you should always give. Is that a steroid? Or it was like, what should you... It wasn't albuterol. I think it was like... But it was, what should you always give the patient?
Regardless of whether they feel like they have symptoms or not?
Oh, wow.
Unless it's prescribed PRN, patients should always take it, regardless of whether they do or not. The only ones that would be prescribed PRN would typically be albuterol, maybe Atrovent, and Palmitate. Everything else should be taken when the patient feels like they need it or not. Anemia drugs, means that. I skipped these. Okay, let's do these. Let's do these. Immunosuppressants. We already talked about cyclosporine and tachymitis. Can you talk about them again?
Yeah.
Okay. They work by inhibiting the production of interleukin-2. Interleukin-2 is necessary for the proliferation of
T-cells.
They're used for patients who have autoimmune disorders where the body is attacking itself, and they're also used for tissue organ transplant to prevent rejection of transplant. Major adverse effects? Never guess.
Infection.
Cyclosporine also has a number of really nasty side effects that have to do with kidney damage and heart damage. It can cause fluid overload. Azathioprine is a cytotoxic drug. The way it works is by killing white blood cells. And so it can kill other fast-growing cells as well, like red blood cells and skin cells. Then we have steroids in order from weakest to strongest. What's the major difference between cortisone and hydrocortisone? By the way, is everyone checked off for health assessment? Is there anyone who is not checked off? Three questions. Not 3 points, 3 questions. Each question is a little more than 1 point. It's not going to apply to that. Don't worry, the grades are not going to be. Steroids.
What was the difference between hydrocortisone and cortisone?
Yes. So hydrocortisone is for topical application, and cortisone is PO. It turns into hydrocortisone once it's in the body. What is each one used for? Hydrocortisone, most common one over the counter. Prednisone, most common one, PO. Methylprednisolone, most common one in the hospital. You can be given PO or IV or IM. Betamethasone is given to a mother who is at risk for premature delivery. because it will help the lungs mature. And then dexamethasone is what's often used for cancer patients. NSAIDs. So, NSAIDs affect both COX-1 and COX-2. The therapeutic value comes from affecting which one?
COX-2.
COX-2. The side effects come from affecting COX-1. So aspirin is special. What makes it special? It's irreversible, which allows it to inhibit platelets. Ibuprofen and naproxen, over the counter. You need to know them because you can tell your patients, your friends and family, yeah, just take some naproxen for that. If someone has menstrual cramps, what should they absolutely not take because they don't work?
Tylenol.
Because it's the prostaglandins that are causing the cramps. So using an NSAID will help relax the uterus, thereby reducing the cramps. Toradol. Major claim to fame is that it can also be used IM and IV. And when used IM or IV, it has a very high pain relief, as much as some opioids. Commonly used after surgery. And then we have the COX-2 inhibitor, which supposedly has fewer side effects, but that's true only for about the first year. What side effects in particular are we trying to avoid?
Bleeding.
GI bleeding from what?
Ulcers.
And celecoxib is the generic name. What's the brand name?
Celebrex.
See Dr. Delavecchia. Did any of you guys have Dr. Delavecchia for chemistry? He did a guest lecture for research. He was talking about some of the drugs. And all of the drugs that were, there were like four COX-2 inhibitors on the market, and all of them are gone except for Celebrex because of other side effects. So we have the antihistamines, first and second gen. What's the major difference?
One is for allergies.
That's not the major difference, though. Side effects. What side effects does generation 1 have that generation 2 has less of? Drowsiness and anticholinergic effects. So, when you have a cold, what do you want? The anticholinergic effect or do you want the antihistamine effect? You want the anticholinergic. But when you have just regular old allergies, what do you want? You want the antihistamine effect. Which is why Allegra and Claritin were like, oh my gosh. This is awesome. Can you imagine being on Benadryl all day?
I love it.
You guys go into your clinical, so I want you guys to watch Carly anytime she's around. If she pulls the opioids, you watch her. And by way of just interesting trivia, hydroxyzine in your body turns into zyrtec.
Do you get
both
effects?
Same?
Do you get both effects one at a time?
Like, would you get, like, anticholinergic
effects, and then
we'll turn
into...
I'm not sure. But zyrtec has less of the drowsiness than anticholinergic effect in hydroxyzine. If you want to fall asleep fast, hydroxyzine, wow. And then we have the opioids. Any questions?
For the opioids?
What?
Any questions for the opioids?
Yes, on the opioids. What's the difference between oxycodone and oxycontin? Oxycontin is time release. What happens if you bite it? Crush it. If you destroy the mechanism and you get it all released at once. They're working on a formulation that won't do that. So even if you crush it, the time release will stay intact. But we don't have it yet. What? Adverse effects, yes. Let's not get there yet. Let's go over each drug first, and we'll go over side effects in general. Alright, so morphine is the standard by which we measure everything else. It comes from the poppy plant. opium, which, by the way, the CIA controls now in Afghanistan. The Taliban had wiped out the opium crop. The United States came in and liberated Afghanistan, and now they are the number one producers of opium in the world again. So beautiful. Hi, good morphone. The lauded major point of fame is it is very, very high potency, so you need very little drug to achieve the effect. Demerol is a synthetic and has fewer side effects sometimes than morphine, but the reason we don't use it very much is as a toxic metabolite. So you can't use it more than 2 or 3 days before it builds up to a toxic level in your liver. Fentanyl, major thing is the duragesic formulation, is a patch. You wear the patch for 3 days. Codeine is also a derivative of opium plant. It can achieve high pain relief levels, but it will be toxic at higher doses, so you can only give lower doses. Oxy and hydrocodone are synthetic versions of codeine, and they're usually prescribed in combination with acetaminophen. So with oxycodone plus acetaminophen is Percocet, and hydrocodone plus acetaminophen is Vicodin or Lortab. Hydrocodone and codeine are also available in syrup versions for cough suppression. And then propoxyphene was taken off the market in the United States, finally. It's a nasty, nasty drug, which is almost all side effect and no pain relief. And for some reason, doctors thought that was safe. Should never be given to an elderly patient, ever. All right. In the United States. Yeah, you should. We'll get there. I guess it's not on the list, but yes, you can. Yeah, tell Kristen it might appear on the test and know it's not on the list. Anyway, when would you give Narcan?
Overdose.
Overdose defined as? Respirations. Less than six. Do you have to skip straight to Narcan, or can you do other things first?
Can
you raise their heart rate and the respiratory rate another way?
Everything.
You have them walk around, that would raise their heart rate. But it might not be enough. It's possible. You can try a lot of things, but it might not be enough. And especially for kids, you go to Narcan. As soon as you give Narcan, what's going to happen to the patient?
They're pain.
Incredible pain. See what you do. Give them more morphine.
Oh.
All right. So, adverse effects in general. Number one adverse effect you have to worry about. Respiratory depression, which can also cause therapeutic effect of cough suppression. Other things, the next one you think about generally is going to be constipation. What do you do about that?
Make them walk.
Water, fiber, and either a stool softener or a laxative. Miralax, by the way, for those of you who have friends and family who may have maybe on these. I just found out one of my neighbors, I haven't seen him in a while, he got hit by a truck or a car while working on the turnpike. He shattered his leg. Like, he said his knee is like got a scar, it goes like all the way around. And he said it was hanging on just by like the flesh. It destroyed his tibia and his tibia and fibula. And like cracked his scapula. And just a bunch of, his ribs were all bruised. Four months later, he's still like, he's like. So he's talking about, being on the morphine. And he's like, they didn't tell me it was going to cause constipation. And they kept asking me, have you gone to the bathroom? No, I don't have to. And then finally, I had to go. And I was like, in there for like an hour, I couldn't go. Well, you didn't ask us. Well, how am I supposed to know to ask?
How do you get hit?
He was on the side of the road. You know, he like delivers materials to construction crews. And he was on the side of the road talking with someone. They're joking, and the car was like too far over. And it's like, yes, they're in trouble. I don't know details, but apparently lawyers are involved. But anyway, so make sure you tell your patients about that. Also cause meiosis. So typically what you need to do with the patient?
Lighting in the
right room. And urinary retention. What do you do about that? Well, no, they have fluids.
Oh, measure their in and outs.
Measure in and outs and encourage them to go. So I know you don't have to go, but let's go try. I told you guys about the surgery I had in January, right? No? No. I had surgery in January. Or in December. So I was on Wartown. And I drink a lot of water. And so I got drunk like, you know, a liter of water. And like 6 hours later, I still don't feel like I have to go at all. You know, so I go and it's like, yeah, you feel you're done, like there's no more to get out. They feel like that, and I'm like, I barely go at all. So you guys like try to go. You can't just like relax. Okay, it's good to come out. You have to like try to go. And even halfway through going, it'll feel like it needs to stop, even though it's not time to stop. So encourage patients to go. And then you have itching, vomiting, and biliary colic. Typically, the only thing they actually do something for, well, for the nausea, you can give them the anti-nausea medications. For the biliary colic, what do you have to do?
Change
drugs. All right, lidocaine and cocaine are local anesthetics. How do they work?
They block sodium
channels. Cocaine is also a vasoconstrictor, and typically is used for throat surgeries. And I asked, it was a throat surgery, I asked the doctor if he used cocaine. He's like, no, we used to. It's like, darn, now I can't tell my students that I did cocaine this Christmas. Acetaminophen works by inhibiting prostaglandin production, but it only does so in the brain and spinal cord. So it's going to reduce fever and perception of pain, but does nothing for inflammation. You need to make sure you are watching the total dose. What's this maximum safe dose in 24-hour period?
4,000
milligrams. Interestingly enough, they're giving an IV these days as well. Yeah, it's an IV bolus. So you give it like over 15 minutes. And then tramadol affects opioid receptors, but is not considered an opioid drug. And you can give in PO and Ultram, and then you combine it with acetaminophen called Percept. And I think that's all she wrote.